The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. We're going to, in a moment here, break down some of the results from the midterm elections there in the United States. And plus, later on in the program, even though both of these individuals lost, Beto O'Rourke in Texas and then Andrew Gillum in Florida for the governorship, O'Rourke was running for the Senate. We're going to look into just the media frenzy surrounding these two and the just unheard of amounts of cash that came into their campaigns, and look at what is behind this. It's very similar in some ways, particularly with O'Rourke, hard to say, but it's very similar to what Barack Obama, or at least what we saw surrounding that campaign back in 2008. What is behind that? To just see how everyone jumps on the bandwagon. And I mean, they go all the way. Tremendous amount of money just poured into those campaigns. And judging by what some were saying, even following their defeats, we probably haven't heard the last of them. There's also some important news coming out of Europe. French President Emmanuel Macron yesterday called for a real European army, as he put it. And the Times of London called it the strongest language yet on the need for an independent defense force. This is something that our listeners, I know, are familiar with. We certainly keep you posted on this timeline of statements. But if you listen to what he said, not only about Europe and coming together to build this real army, he had some quite remarkable statements to make regarding the United States as well. That's coming up later on in the program. And speaking of the program, tomorrow, Friday, we're coming up to the 100-year anniversary of the end of World War I. That's November the 11th, which I believe falls on Sunday. So over the next couple of programs, maybe even carrying on into next week, we've been discussing quite a few themes that we can build on following that conclusion to the Great War, World War I, but it was called the Great War at the time, the war to end all wars. It certainly didn't do that. So we'll look at some of the lessons, some of the history, and even just the past 100 years, what a century it's been in terms of violence, war, bloodshed, oppressive government. I mean, we've seen it all. Well, when you look at this midterm election in the United States, I mean, how many times did we hear leading up to it? You heard it again yesterday afternoon on CNN, just how important this particular midterm election was. This is clip one.
We're in the thick of what is perhaps the most critical non-presidential election in modern times.
That's Jake Tapper at CNN, and that's something that we heard on both sides over and over again. This one is critical. This one is super important. Well, when we see these things unfold, it just makes me, and I think it makes many of you as well, very appreciative for what we have in God's church. The Great Again booklet, America Under Attack. I mean, the fact that we can look at these events and really see it from God's perspective, more recently than those two booklets, the Saving America article from earlier this year, May, June, 2018 Trumpet. And then most recently, the Kavanaugh article. That's in the latest Trumpet magazine. It's amazing just how much that, I know I got into this on Friday's show because it was featured at thetrumpet.com that day. And really, you look at the results from last night and there's quite a few commentators talking about the Kavanaugh effect of this particular election. Well, both sides are, it really does highlight how divided we are as a country, the United States. But it's also interesting, both sides coming away from last night, claiming victory because the House, the Democrats won control or won a majority in the House. But then the President his administration, quite excited about expanding its power in the Senate. President Trump tweeted out last night that he saw it as a tremendous success, this election. And he's been tweeting away this morning as well. Very, very excited. At least that's the way he's spinning it. This is what Sarah Sanders had to say last night. I think this was on MSNBC, clip two.
I think a huge victory for the president tonight with the announcement of the Senate looking like it's definitely going to stay with Republicans and pick up a couple of seats. The president spent the last week campaigning heavily for Senate candidates, and we're seeing that pay off, certainly in places like Indiana, Tennessee, Texas, all places that the president came in, helped close the deal, and certainly a good night for the president so far.
That's the White House press secretary, Sarah Sanders, last night calling this a huge victory for the president. And in looking at the Senate, there's a couple races, I guess, that still haven't been determined yet, but to end up with 53 to 55 seats, potentially 55 seats in the Senate, that's a comfortable majority compared to what he just recently had, which was 51. That represents a pretty big advantage for the president in the Senate. When you think about any further judicial nominations that might come up, cabinet nominations as well, there's quite a few of those, commentators are saying, that he's going to have to make following this election. Kavanaugh, if you remember, Brett Kavanaugh, he just barely got through. There were only 51 Republicans in there. And there were the ones that sort of tipped the scales in either direction, the swing votes, and there was some question, even with most in America up in arms about how that man was mistreated, but there was still some question as to whether he'd even get confirmed. As it was, what was it? I think 51 to 49, something like that. Just a very, very slim majority in the case of that confirmation. Well, speaking of the so-called Kavanaugh effect, if you look at those senators that were vulnerable, the ones that came out and voted against Kavanaugh, a lot of them were voted out last night. Donnelly, Heitkamp, McCaskill, Nelson, all four of them voted against Kavanaugh. The only one that broke from the Democrat ranks, Joe Manchin, he prevailed in his Senate contest. I think that was in West Virginia. Fox News had a bit to say about this morning. It says incumbent Senate Democrats in battleground states who opposed the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination appeared to have paid a price on Election Day. And as you heard from Sarah Sanders there, I mean, the president was out really focusing on those crucial states, those battleground states like Florida. And well, just across the board, he was in Missouri there right at the last, where McCaskill lost. He spent a lot of time in Montana. I think he visited Montana four times. Missouri, he was there five times. And these were big victories for the president. And it just showed, I mean, Obama was in Florida quite a few times as well, hoping to back Gillum as the governor. And then Nelson, I guess it was, who was the senator that lost. So there's quite a lot to be said for the victories for the Trump administration, and I'll talk about the Democrats here in just a second. But last night or this morning, I forget which, the president tweeted out this particular clip he quoted on his Twitter account, because it's this commentator just gushing over what he sees as Trump's magic effect. This is commentator Ben Stein last night, clip three.
There's only been five times in the last 105 years that an incumbent president has won seats in the Senate in the off-year election. Mr. Trump has magic about him. This guy has magic coming out his ears. He is an astonishing vote-getter, an astonishing campaigner. Republicans are unbelievably lucky to have him, and I'm just awed at how well they've done. Everyone thought the Democrats would take the House. Everyone thought they would make some pickups in the Senate. In fact, they did take the House, but very, very narrowly, and they are making no pickups at all in the Senate, and I think it's all the Trump magic. Trump is a magic man.
He certainly did prove himself to be a political force still. I mean, they wouldn't have wanted him to come and campaign for Ted Cruz in Texas, for example, or in Florida multiple times, in Tennessee, in Indiana. in Missouri, in Montana. He went to those places, and there was a strong showing in his favor in all of them, excepting, I guess, Nevada. I mean, I don't know all the places that he stopped, but you can certainly see from the last couple of weeks where he put his focus. And there's Ben Stein talking about the Trump magic. And when you think about what he's been going against, I mean, this too is a remarkable side of this story. For 2 years, more than that, he has been attacked every day. He's going against accepting a few Fox News, talk radio, but he's going against the entire media complex. How does he pull off these victories? How did he pull it off in 2016? Well, you look at the Kavanaugh hearings article my father wrote here again. There are a lot of Americans, evidently, that were not happy with Mr. Kavanaugh being borked, as the saying goes. My father talked about some of that history from 31 years ago. And a lot more, as I say, it's in the latest trumpet, and really the sobering warning in all of this is that it shows how, as he said in the article, that we're on the verge of collapse. I mean, this is a divided America. The lawless spirit is strong. I think I played this clip for you last week, Thursday or Friday, when the president was in Columbia, Missouri. And he just talked about the assault that he's coming against every single day. Clip six.
Never before has a president had to withstand the level of partisan assault from the media that President Trump has had to withstand.
He was actually quoting someone about the attacks on President Trump. And in that article, the Kavanaugh hearings reveal America's lawless spirit. My father speaks of that spirit that works in the children of disobedience, as Paul wrote in Ephesians 2. Satan just loves to stir up hatred and strife, unbridled emotion. And this election last night, I mean, it really does reveal just how divided the United States is. You look at the Democrats on the other side, of course, they're excited about winning back the House. And Nicole Wallace, she's a journalist at MSNBC, she was talking about how this is going to change Trump's life for the worse. This is what she said last night, clip four.
It changes everything, and I don't know if anyone has explained, Donald Trump, not a student of history, I don't know if he understands how much his life changed tonight. Democrats, Adam Schiff is now the chairman of the House Intel Committee. I was reminded today by a former national security official that no one ever passed legislation to protect Robert Mueller, so anyone worried about getting to the bottom of the Russia question now has Democrats in control of the House Intel Committee. And I think, Chuck, you were just saying this with Casey, every tax return, every scandal, and there have been a lot for a White House 2 years in. They've been through more cabinet secretaries, and there have been cabinet secretaries too corrupt for Donald Trump, which is saying something.
So you get an idea of the direction that the Democrats will take. There's not going to be a return to civility anytime soon. I played that clip for you last week from Maxine Waters. I forget the committee that she's going to be heading up, but she was telling her constituents, I'm going to do to them what they did to me, what they did to us. Those bankers, those CEOs, Wall Street, insurance companies, payback starts as soon as we get a majority, as soon as we get control of the committees. As soon as Adam Schiff gets control of the Intel Committee, Andrew McCarthy, he had a great piece at the National Review talking about, okay, there's no blue wave, but even if the Democrats get a simple majority in the House, they didn't get the 60 or 70 seats that they were thinking about a few months ago, but they got just enough to get a majority. And as McCarthy says here, from a political standpoint, I suppose that would be looked at as a Republican win. But that political win would be a big loss as far as the law is concerned. He said, if Republicans lose the House, even by one seat, control of all the committees is transferred to Democrats. And with control goes subpoena power. He says further on, if Democrats win a House majority, even by a margin that the political analysts regard as a disappointment, you can bank on this. The congressional probes of possible investigative abuses by the Obama Justice Department and FBI in connection with the 2016 election will be kaput. Over. So they're not going to continue. Now they've got the lame duck period here between now and when the new congressmen and women show up. But still, once they gain control, I mean, you can be sure that they're going to close the book on those ongoing investigations. Additionally, he says, while the investigations of the investigators would be over, the investigations of President Trump will be in full swing. His businesses, any Trump conglomerate reliance on Russian financing, claimed violations of the Emoluments Clause, his tax returns, the alleged damage done by the deregulation policies to the environment, public health, worker safety, minority rights. I mean, this is what Nicole Wallace was saying on MSNBC. Does he even know that this changes everything? I suspect that he probably does. And as we've seen from the past 2 years, he will fight back. And I think he does have some leverage. They lost control of those committees. The Republicans did in the House. But you do at least have a president presiding over the Justice Department, the FBI, and so on. And McCarthy even says, I mean, just looking at it strategically, whether it would even be wise for the Democrats to push too hard, because this really, I mean, you look at it politically, there may be a few in the Trump administration that were quite happy to give up control of the House, because it really does set up Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi to be the big villains that the Trump administration can campaign against in 2 years' time. Particularly if they push to a point like they did with Kavanaugh. And what do you think that they're going to do? Given what we know in the Saving America article, in Great Again, in America Under Attack, and now the Kavanaugh piece. We've been reading and studying all of these. There was an article at the Daily Wire talking about all of these new committee leaders. Here come the crazies, it says. Another Democrat just goes through the list of these ones that are going to be heading up the committees. He mentions Adam Schiff. Schiff said in an interview with CNN that the committee would investigate questions involving Russian money laundering and President Trump's businesses. Schiff said his committee would work in tandem with Waters' focus on potential money laundering schemes involving the Trump campaign in Russia, saying he'll back special counsel Robert Mueller's probe into alleged collusion. Further on, he says, the question, though, this is quoting Schiff, the question, though, that I don't know whether Mueller has been able to answer, because I don't know whether he's been given the license to look into it, is where the Russians laundering money through the, is where the Russians laundering money through the Trump organization? This is the big question in Schiff's mind. I don't know if Mueller's been given enough latitude. Money laundering. Russians laundering money through the Trump organization. He says that will be a very high priority to get an answer to. These are the scenarios that they're coming up with. And you heard that reporter last night. Everything changes. I mean, now we can get control of these investigations. This Daily Wire piece says then there's Representative Jerry Nadler, who would be poised to take over the House Judiciary Committee. Nadler could work with Schiff to oversee any attempt to impeach Donald Trump. And so on and on it goes. They're already fantasizing about how they can use this new power to take down the president. Again, which way will they go? Nancy Pelosi, last night, she was talking to a reporter saying that they were undoubtedly going to win. They just wanted to determine how much they were going to win by. And she didn't sound as divisive as what we've been hearing in recent weeks. This is what she had to say after a reporter asked her about, you know, whether the two sides now can come together. Clip 7.
Can you work with President Trump? Can there be common ground between the Democrats and the president?
I think that a strength in our common ground really will spring from the public, understanding of what is really on the table. On the issue of building the infrastructure of America, the president has said that that is something he wants to do. It's always been nonpartisan. Hopefully we can work together to advance that agenda. Again, how the form it takes will be listening to the public so that they see what is at stake and how we do that.
The constituents, I guess, will decide. The base. And I mean, both sides are dug in. And of course, Nancy Pelosi, as we've written about before at the Trumpet, she is hardly a moderate. This is the same woman who just this week made the statement about San Francisco values. Clip 10.
But San Francisco values, that's what we're about.
That's what we're about. She's offended when people attack San Francisco, the city she represents. And she proudly says, look, we're liberals, we're progressives. And San Francisco values, that's what we're about. So which direction do you suppose that it will go? Again, consider what my father's been writing. The Kavanaugh hearings reveal America's lawless spirit. He talked about this spectacle just from a month or two ago and the spiritual dimension behind it. There's a force, he said, in America that is crazed for power and intolerant of and angered by dissent. There is a force that passionately hates biblical morality and that considers abortion, and well, it goes down the laundry list. Hatred, though, the devil's fingerprints, it's all over it. McCarthy said at the end of his piece, interestingly, if Democrats take over the House, there is only one way we would get disclosure from the Justice Department and FBI of documents pertaining to the 2016 Trump-Russia investigation that the Republican House committees were pushing for. That would be if President Trump ordered disclosure. So he still has a little bit of leverage himself. This Jeroboam that God has to quite a large extent cleared the way for. Saving America from the radical left. What we see in the months ahead, I mean, we'll be able to know a lot about where this is headed just simply because of these articles, these booklets that we've been going through these past few years. When we come back, we'll continue with, as I said at the start of the show, a little bit about the story of Beto O'Rourke and then Andrew Gillum, who was running for the governorship in Florida last night. Both of them lost, but I think some interesting points that we can make before we conclude today's show, talking about Emmanuel Macron's statements yesterday about a European army. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Is it outside the realm of possibility that Beto O'Rourke, coming off of this near miss, will run for president?
That's Chris Matthews last night, just right after they learned that O'Rourke lost his Senate run. Robert Francis O'Rourke running against Rafael Edward Cruz. They both go by nicknames. In any event, O'Rourke lost, and before all of this, I mean, I think he was a three-term congressman from El Paso. He was in the House of Representatives, an unknown, a virtual unknown. But now, I mean, he's quickly emerged as a national figure. He's like a celebrity. He has reporters, they're calling him a celebrity, just like they did with Obama. As I say, he came out of the 16th Congressional District there in southwest Texas. And for the most part, has been a low-profile member of Congress. But then he decides to run against Ted Cruz. And he makes no apologies for coming from the radical left. And he's out campaigning. And the controversial subject comes up, or he's asked a question. And he gives this response that I'll play for you here in just a second. And this video just goes viral. And it turns him into a superstar. It's like 3 or 4 minutes in length. This is what he said. He's asked at the start about NFL football players kneeling during the national anthem. And he goes and talks about how minorities have been persecuted for 2-3 minutes. And then he concludes here at the end with this statement, clip 8.
And so nonviolently, peacefully, while the eyes of this country are watching these games, they take a knee to bring our attention and our focus to this problem to ensure that we fix it. That is why they are doing it. And I can think of nothing more American than to peacefully stand up or take a knee for your rights anytime, anywhere, any place.
He can think of nothing more American than to peacefully stand up or take a knee during the national anthem. For your rights. Anytime, anywhere, any place, he said. And so this video, this short clip, immediately, it gets millions and millions of views on YouTube. I forget the exact count. But Ellen DeGeneres, she's got a talk show in Southern California. She's made aware of it. Again, this is just for a Senate campaign in Texas, in one state. In Texas, where it was pretty much assured that Ted Cruz would win. But she sees this video, and right away, he's out. This is not in Texas. I mean, he's a national figure now because of this video that you just heard a bit from. And so here she is then talking to or telling Beto O'Rourke just how much she thinks he's awesome because of that video that went viral, clip 9.
So thank you for being here. I saw this. I was I think in Seattle, somebody showed me a week ago, and now it's up to 44 million views. So it has really gone viral. A lot of people have seen this, and I'm so glad that they have. So I saw it, I tweeted it, and I wanted to meet you right away. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah.
That's just the opening segment there, or the opening bit from the segment. They love it. Hollywood loves this sort of thing. You get a politician that comes out and says, look, I not only think it's fine for him to do that, I don't really see anything more American than that. Kneeling. Kneeling during the national anthem. Hollywood gets on board. The major media enthusiastically hops on board the campaign, the O'Rourke train. And money comes pouring in, not from Texas, from all across the United States. That Senate race between both candidates, O'Rourke and Cruz, $100 million was put into just one campaign for the Senate. It set a new record. $100 million between the two of them, and more than two-thirds of that was the Beto O'Rourke campaign. This unknown congressman from the 16th Congressional District there in Texas, $70 million he raked in. And it was a fairly close race. But still, Ted Cruz ended up winning in the end because Texas has been, at least for a few decades, it's been a conservative stronghold. That may be changing. I know the Democrats are really fantasizing about that. But why this phenomenon? Why him? The celebrity now, the way that the media see it. Andrew Gillum's another case. He won in his Democrat primary, and many thought, well, he's so far left. This is great. This is great for Republicans. There's no way that Floridians are going to vote in someone that radical, that extreme, that far left. But the thing of it is, the media, the celebrities, the left-wing billionaires, they start pouring money into his campaign because they love it. They love that message. This is from Forbes. It says, despite raising $52.5 million, including at least $11.5 million from several out-of-state billionaires, Democrat Andrew Gillum lost the Florida governor's race on Tuesday to Republican opponent Ron DeSantis by about a 1% margin. So he just barely lost. Gillum, he's under all these investigations, corruption in the Tallahassee government. He was the mayor for some time. But he's just like O'Rourke. He's very eloquent. He's got a lot of charisma, good looks, that sort of thing. And the money just comes pouring in. You may have heard or seen some videos. This reporter out on college campuses in Texas asking students about Beto O'Rourke. Well, I love him. Yeah, I've got a pin or a sticker on my backpack right here. Vote for O'Rourke. Can you tell me what accomplishments he's had? 6 years in Congress, the House of Representatives, and none of the students could think of anything. But they're caught up in the frenzy. It's like with Obama. He comes out of nowhere, and everyone's on board. The media, Hollywood, the university campuses, popular culture, they're all on board. Never mind what he believes. Never mind his policies, what he has or has not done. If he hasn't done anything, so long as he can talk the talk, well, that's really what we're most concerned about. That's what we're looking for. And so here, it's a disappointing evening, I suppose. He loses this Senate campaign, but really this narrative, this storyline, it had been building for weeks as the progressives in the major media, they knew, they had a pretty good idea he wasn't going to be able to pull it off, not in Texas. And so already they were preparing the narrative that even when he loses, this is a victory. Because we've got our man. We've got our man for 2020. They want, they prefer the leaders that come from the far extremities of the left. And so all the celebrities last night, they're tweeting out, this is really good. I mean, we've got Beto for president. What about Gillum for vice president? You see the stranglehold, don't you, that the radical left has on the Democrat Party? And again, these are themes that my father has touched on in recent months, in the last few years, in fact. God intervened. God did intervene. He stepped in, as my father has explained, to strip away a lot of the power from the radicals, to slow down America's fall, to give America just a little more time for the work's sake. He's allowing these events, he's orchestrating many of them, in order to help us see ourselves, to see our sins, to see that transgressions are coming to the full. In the Kavanaugh article, he says, God is watching over and guiding events in America. If he were not, this nation would already be destroyed. I mean, look at the ones that the powerful want in power. Look at the ones that the media are just begging, urging to run for office. He says here, look at the lunacy on the left. This is from the Kavanaugh piece. Look at the lunacy, and you can see why God had to save Israel. But again, it's only temporary. We cannot allow this temporary resurgence to make us feel comfortable. Far more serious correction is coming. And then listen to this point. I'll leave you with this. It says, Republicans rejoiced that Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court, but anyone who thinks the war is won is naive. In many ways, Satan won by losing. His grip on the left got tighter. And victory against the devil is always only temporary. He is relentless. After a loss, he regroups for his next assault. He may lose a battle, but he never quits the war. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send us some feedback, any comments, you can send those through to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Europe needs an army, a real army. That's what French President Emmanuel Macron called for yesterday. As I said at the top of the show, the Times of London here called it his strongest language yet on the need for an independent defense force. It is pretty strong language. I mean, typically leaders in the EU, they call for things like a common European defense initiative. There's not too many, though, that just come out straight up and say, look, we need a real army. We need a real army, a European army. Macron says we will not protect the Europeans unless we decide to have a true European army. And then he talked about the dangers that Europe is facing. Russia at our frontiers, they're a threat. He says we need a Europe that defends itself better alone without just depending on the United States. So you know all about this. President Trump saying, look, you need to pay for your fair share in this NATO alliance. And so here's Macron saying, we don't want to be so dependent on the U.S. But then when he went on to say, really, particularly about the United States here, what he went on to say is quite remarkable. He says, you have authoritarian powers that are reemerging and rearming on the frontiers of Europe. We are being hit by attempted intrusions in cyberspace and multiple interventions in our democratic life. We have to protect ourselves with respect to China, Russia, and even the United States of America. We have to protect ourselves. Even from the United States of America, says the French president. He's not the only one that thinks this way. Again, the language is getting stronger with respect to the army. And it's getting stronger in opposition to the United States as well. Friedrich Merz, he's the one, I guess, he's the front runner now to succeed Angela Merkel. We don't know who's going to be there as the head of the Christian Democratic Union. We'll have plenty to say on it when it happens. But to this point, he's out front. He's ahead in the opinion polls. And on October 25th, this is just a little while ago, I think a day or two before Angela Merkel announced that she was stepping down, Merz signed a letter along with five other leading German thinkers where he too came out with strong support for an EU army. Europe, he said, should work toward a goal of a common European army. He went on to say that we no longer need national armies. We don't need any national armies anymore. We need to combine all of our forces into one. This is the man that could soon head up the Christian Democratic Union, or maybe even be at the helm of Germany. Again, there's still some uncertainty here. But I mean, look at the language. Look at the aims, the objectives. Look at what some of these leaders are saying. In this world, where there's so many earth-shaking events happening, week in and week out. Now, at the same time, Germany and Macron are talking about a European army, a real European army. There's also this continuous discussion on Europe's nuclear power. nuclear bombs, nuclear weapons. I mean, that's been quite a topic in Germany these last few years. I think 2 years in particular. They don't have nuclear weapons in Germany. They rely upon the United States for protection. It's the U.S. that has the nuclear umbrella there. But what are we to do in the age of Jeroboam? What are we to do, they're asking, now that Donald Trump is in charge of the United States? Well, some are suggesting that the quickest way to equip Germany with nuclear bombs is for France to share their arsenal. In the latest issue of the German Council on Foreign Relations, Michael Ruhl, he's the head of the Energy Security Unit in the NATO Department for New Security Challenges, he called for Germany to have some kind of alternative nuclear weapon. Bruno Tertres, he's the deputy director of the Paris Foundation. He's the one that's talked about the sharing. France has a nuclear bomb. So maybe France could station part of its arsenal, perhaps 10 missiles in Germany or Poland. Does this sound like a good idea? Does this sound like it would make the world safer? This expert says, this is Bruno Tertres, he says, we do not know how the transatlantic relationship will continue, and that's why it is time to have an open and honest discussion between European politicians and experts on the nuclear issue. So here are more voices, more and more of them, prominent voices, commentators, politicians, leaders in Europe, pushing for an EU military, pushing for Germany to be nuclear armed. Well, if you've read The Trumpet, if you've read The Plain Truth magazine over the course of Herbert Armstrong's ministry, you can see why we would point to this as being very significant. There's that section in the on the website, Why the Trumpet Watches. If you click on that tab at the top of the website page, you can go to Europe Militarizing, one of the links under the Europe section, and get to this article that Richard Palmer put together for the trend section, Europe's Push Toward a Unified Military. It's a very helpful article. It gives you a timeline, all these statements, the actual action that Europe is taking or has been taking in recent years, the steps forward. I mean, most of the Dutch army is under German command right now, and significant chunks of the Czech army and the Romanian army under German command right now. There's all those reports from years past where they're working on an EU military headquarters, and all these other initiatives together with that. Several of these involve, you know, smaller groups of nations, not all 28. And it is a mix of iron and clay, like Daniel 2 says. But we have to look at the trend line. We have to see the direction, and you see it too in relation to all these other events going on in the world. As I said, like even with respect to the midterm elections, I mean, we can look at that through the lens that God makes available to us, Bible prophecy. Herbert Armstrong, he said back in 1953, he said there would be 10 powerful European nations that would combine their forces. They'd combine their arsenal with one another, a united military force. In 1978, he said the Europeans are far more disturbed about their safety in relying on United States military power to protect them than Americans realize. That was in 1978. You can find that quote in that Trends article. They want their own military power, Mr. Armstrong said. They know that a political union of Europe would produce a third major world power as strong as either the U.S. or the USSR, possibly stronger. See, they know. And look, they've already reached a political union. They have an economic union. And the military's coming soon. It comes last, but it is coming. You put all those prophecies together, as we've been doing recently, even on this program, Daniel 2 and 7, Revelation 13 and 17. 10 nations, 10 groups that will appear at this last time, the end time. Revelation 17, 12 describes 10 kings. 10 kings, they come together for 1 hour with the beast. I mean, it's going to be a short-lived reign. This seventh head of the beast power, this seventh head with 10 horns, this final revival of the Holy Roman Empire, this federation of 10 European nations. And you'll find it right in the same location that you would find the Holy Roman Empire of old. Clearly, this is a military union. And ultimately, it's going to square off with Jesus Christ and his army. That Trends article talks about other prophecies about this war-making power, Isaiah 10 and verses 5 through 7, where God says the end-time Assyrians, that they're going to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. The prophet Habakkuk, he refers to this end-time European power as the Chaldean Empire, a bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. That's in Habakkuk 1. Jeremiah 5, verse 15, it says, I will bring a nation upon you from far, O house of Israel, says the Eternal. It is a mighty nation. It is an ancient nation, a nation whose language you know not, neither understand what they say. I mean, they come, they speak a different language, but they're coming against you. Think of Ezekiel 33 as well. Ezekiel 6, verse 3 says, you mountains of Israel, hear the word of the Eternal God. Thus says the Lord God to the mountains and to the hills, to the rivers, to the valleys. Behold, I, even I, will bring a sword upon you. I will destroy your high places. I'm going to do it again. Just like he says in Jeremiah 30, verse 3. Jeremiah, Ezekiel. I mean, these were prophets who wrote about Israel going into captivity something like 100 years after ancient Israel went into captivity. So what could they be referring to? Well, that's why it says in Jeremiah 30 and verse 3 that he's going to bring again the captivity of Israel. It's coming again. That's why you're hearing this warning. That's the warning that comes through in all of those articles I mentioned in the first segment. The Great Again book, The America Under Attack, Saving America from the Radical Left, the Kavanaugh hearings, all of it. God's trying to wake us up. There's a military power building in Europe right now that God said thousands of years ago, that God said would bring again our captivity. That's why we watch. Why the trumpet watches, that's the trends section there at the top of our website. Well, coming up on tomorrow's program, Friday's program, as I said at the start, we're going to be focusing in on the 100-year anniversary of the conclusion to World War I. Mr. Armstrong talked in Missing Dimension and Sex about just the immoral slide that our nations went on following those two world wars, the first war and the second one. We'll focus on that, I think, maybe on Monday. But we've also discussed just how that World War I really was the first modern war fought with tanks and machine guns and things like that. And, of course, the German problem. That's another angle from both wars that you could dwell on. So we'll spend some time on that in the next few days. Sam also really, really, really wants us to get into the Dardanelles. Remember the Dardanelles. We'll see if we get into that later on this week as well. So we hope that you'll join us again tomorrow, Friday, and then perhaps even on Monday's show for some of those subjects. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.